number's too big to ignore, and I know too much to go.
Don't mess with women!
It is our decision, not theirs.
I hope John Ashcroft is listening. He's just over there, you know, because we are a true threat to his vision of America.
So keep the faith.
I'm Senator Barbara Boxer, and I'm pro-choice.
Keep your laws off my body. Keep your...
So why is it that the loudest voices in the public square that claim to be for women are also for abortion? Is there a way of separating the ideals of feminism, past or present, from Roe v. Wade, a pro-abortion stance, abortion on demand? We're going to answer that question here for the remainder of Issues Etc. today. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Sarin Foster, Executive Director of Feminists for Life, based in Washington, D.C., is our guest. You can join us with questions or comments as well. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-MYIE, or email your questions or comments right here to the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Sarin Foster, Executive Director of Feminists for Life, based in Washington, D.C., is our guest. Sarin, welcome.
Hi, Todd. It's great to be back on your show.
Why don't we see more pregnant girls, young women, on college campuses?
Well, that is the critical question, especially as everyone's going back to school now, and so many parents are sending their children off to college, many for the first time. Well, what we've learned is that from those who perform abortions and those who research abortion, for those who support abortion, is that most women who are pregnant in college are overwhelmingly deciding that they need to go to the abortion clinic if they are pregnant. And this is not a new trend, but it's an incredibly disturbing trend, and it's one that's now affecting generations of women.
We hear often from the feminist mainstream that being pro-choice is the only way to be pro-women. Is being pro-choice even consistent with being pro-woman?
Well, it's certainly not consistent with the early American feminists who defined feminism. Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and the early American feminists, each of them spoke out against abortion. They spoke out against abortion because they opposed the damage that was being done to women. They were upset about the lack of resources and support for women and the lack of autonomy within society. And they were very upset about the fact that this human being, this newly formed human being, did not have protection from abortion, and they felt it was wrong. And this is very consistent with their views on abolition, which obviously the early American suffragists fought to ensure that those who were enslaved were free. They also fought for the rights of women to vote, and they fought for our right to life.
Okay, so give us just a little bit of a history lesson. How did we get from the original suffragettes, the original feminists, although they wouldn't call themselves that, But these towering figures of early feminism and their pro-life positions to the March for Women's Lives back in 2004, celebrating Roe v. Wade, celebrating abortion on demand, and making it sound as though if you're not for abortion, you're not for women.
Unfortunately, there were two men who founded a group called NARAL, the National Association to Repeal the Abortion Laws. They were walking or wandering around the country at the time when the second wave of feminism was underway in the 1970s, and they were concerned, the two founders, for two different reasons, were concerned that women could not have abortions. One, felt that there were too many people in this world, there were population issues, especially in America, that the country was exploding, that we wouldn't be able to sustain ourselves. It's ironic that obesity is now the big problem in the United States in terms of health. So obviously Americans can figure that part out. The other person, who was the co-founder of NARAL, believed that if we would have safer abortions if they were legal abortions, and reasoned much like those who would promote legalizing prostitution. Obviously, neither one of them benefits women, but that was the premise. The second one that I mentioned was a doctor, he had seen a botched abortion, and his name was Bernard Nathanson. And since then, he has become a pro-life activist. After filming an abortion, he'd seen what he had done to women and to their children 65,000 times, and decided that it was not best for women or the babies. And so he changed his mind on abortion and told us that they had convinced, the founders of NARAL, had convinced the women's movement of the 1970s that if women wanted rights like those of a man, then they would have to basically, you know, pass as men. If you want to be able to be hired and paid and promoted and educated like men, then you shouldn't bother your employer with issues like maternity leave and benefits and time off for once your child is growing, you know, to enjoy their first day at school, or see them off for a prom, or in case they needed some help with their homework, or mumps or measles, that parents, you know, especially mothers, should not take off time for their children, as if fathers wouldn't. So, unfortunately, this putting abortion in the context of feminism was truly a betrayal to women, and it was a betrayal of the early American concept of feminism, which Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton and many others had denounced in the latter half of the 1800s.
How important was The Feminine Mystique, that book that came out, that by all accounts at least began in what seems like a rather quaint way now, the wedge being driven between women and motherhood?
Well, Sarah Weddington, when she first wrote that book, it's important to note that she never mentioned abortion in that first version, the first edition, but it was included later on, that she has this notion Betty Friedan. Betty Friedan is not for abortion, but she is for this, the choice of women to have children. And unfortunately, her choice includes abortion at this time. But it wasn't originally so. She was against it. But the founders of NARAL convinced her that it was a civil right, that it was important for women to be able to exercise this right. Instead of a right, we believe it's a wrong.
We are told over and over again, it seems to be at least of probably, you know, less than half of the population of the United States, it's considered that Roe v. Wade was a triumph for women, that it was a legal, if you will, emancipation for women. What was Roe v. Wade, the passage of this landmark court decision, really in terms of the well-being of women?
Well, for many women today, they feel that Roe v. Wade pulled out from under women the resources and support the women deserved and needed if they were facing an unplanned pregnancy. And there are millions of women, unfortunately, have personally experienced what we were told would be something that was rare, that abortion would be something that would happen, you know, in cases of rape or incest or life of the mother. And instead, it happens over a million times in this country today, you know, probably 40 or 50, perhaps, million abortions, nobody's really certain, have been performed on women. And we believe at Feminists for Life that after 35 years of legal and lethal abortion that has certainly taken the lives of this generation, a lot of their peers, and the coming generations, that it has also taken the lives of some women, that it has certainly damaged the lives of women who have survived an abortion, and that women deserve better. Abortion is a reflection that we have not met the needs of women. And it's up to women to say that we're not going to settle for less. And we've got to start asking our leaders at every single level, you know, do you believe that women deserve better than abortion? And if so, what will you do to help answer the unmet needs of women regarding support and resources so that women do not face this and have to think about this for the rest of their lives?
Is there something a little different about the crop of, we were talking earlier about the young women on campus, some of them might find themselves unexpectedly pregnant. Is there something different about this generation, Saren, that they are the Roe generation? They are, if they are going to college, they are survivors of their mother's will, after Roe. Is there something different about these young women? About a minute before our break.
There's a couple things. One, the first thing is that many of them know that they have had siblings whom they've lost. When both the sons and the daughters know this now, who are in college. The other thing, and the important thing, is that they have seen what a baby looks like in the womb, and they know that it's not some sort of parasite or some sort of alien creature, that it's a human being, and they can distinctly see it in 3 and 4D sonograms on Oprah, the cover of Newsweek and Life magazine, etc. So the question of if it's a human life has been settled. The question remains, is this the best we can do?
I want to hear from you folks on the issue of feminism and abortion. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Monday, August the 25th. Our guest is Sarin Foster of Feminists for Life, based in Washington, D.C. This break is a great time to call when we come back. Another half hour with Sarin Foster. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-MYIE. You can also email questions or comments to us right here in the studio. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Talkback@issuesetc.org. I want you to think about that for a minute. Every, not just the young women, but young men, born after 1973, they'd all be, well, if you're old enough, 35 this year. A survivor of Roe. We'll talk more about feminism and abortion with Sarin Foster after this.
Did they tear it out with talons of steel and give you a shot so that you wouldn't feel and washed it away as if it wasn't real?
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Will your church be one of the Issues, Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues, Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues, Etc. 300, click the Sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues, Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues, Etc. 300.
Evidence. Now, who has the most? Answers. With Ken Ham, author of the powerful best-selling book, The Lie Evolution. You know, it seems to me that people are always looking to see which side, creation or evolution, has the most evidence. Actually, this whole way of looking at it is wrong. You see, most Christians think that evolution has one pile of evidence and creation has another pile, so the side with the biggest pile wins. But that's not really the case. We've actually all got the same facts. We all pull from the same pile. We just interpret these same facts differently. I saw a good example at the Natural History Museum in London. There's this big display showing the amazing variety of dogs. And at the end, a sign says this is powerful evidence for evolution. But this doesn't have anything to do with molecules to man evolution. I looked at the same facts and I saw powerful evidence for a creator who put amazing variety within the original dog kind that he created, and all dogs belong to the same kind. No, we don't need more evidence for the Bible. We need to learn how to interpret the evidence within the Bible's framework. And real science confirms the interpretation.
What do Muslims believe about the book of Genesis? Well, to explore that fascinating topic, Ken Ham interviewed a former Muslim, and the CD is available to you when you offer a donation of any size. Get the audio CD when you go to our website, answersoffer.org, or call us toll-free at 1-888-89-ANSWERS, 888-89-ANSWERS.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Sarin Foster is our guest. 25 more minutes with her talking about feminism and abortion. So what do you think? Do you think that to be pro-woman, you need to be pro-abortion? It's so easy because that is drilled into our heads day after day after day by the media that the two go together. 1-877-623-MYIE. Talkback@issuesetc.org. We were talking before about the survivors of that Roe generation survivors. Let's also talk about the women post-abortion, those who have come to the realization that what they did was not good for their baby, obviously, and not good for them. What do these women need, Sarin?
Well, I think we need to reach out to them, and increasingly by women who've had abortions and have gone through post-abortion reconciliation, groups like Rachel's Vineyard, Silent No More Awareness Campaign, Project Rachel, a number of pregnancy care centers across the country are holding post-abortion reconciliation support groups or meetings or conferences, and some actually for men, too, one in Milwaukee that's coming up shortly, because this has affected men, it's affected grandparents and siblings, et cetera. But we have to start with the woman, and we have to remember that the hurt is deepest with her, and that in many ways we have let her down, and she has settled for less. And so I think that the first thing is for them to know that there are people who care and understand, and then that we are there for her, and that we are there for her, even though she has done something that we probably wouldn't have chosen for her, and that she knows better than we do now the impact that abortion can have on women like her. So I think unconditional love is the most important concept for us to have, and to sit there and think about, you know, rather than being judgmental, but thinking about what is it that put her in this situation. For many in the pro-life movement, it's really hard for us to sit there and envision why a woman would have an abortion. Why would she lay her body down and let somebody come at her, you know, to perform a surgical abortion? Or why would she swallow a bitter pill like RE46? And for those who are poor, it may be easier for us to envision this, but for those who have been let down by those they counted on the most, for young women who didn't want to let down their parents, for those who may have, you know, dealt with issues of shame, for those who have been in marriages where domestic violence is rampant and their husbands have said, we're not having any more kids, or he didn't want to have a child. You know, there are a lot of different reasons why women have abortions. And interestingly, Guttmacher Institute, with formerly Planned Parenthood's research arm and now on its own, has been for many years asking women, why do they have abortions? And for Feminists for Life, we take this as our task list. If we want to end abortion in our generation, we need to systematically eliminate the reasons that drive women to abortion. And so for those who have the most, the greatest number of abortions, they are college age. And Feminists for Life has chosen to make those in college our priority, because we know, as well as those who operate abortion clinics, that they are incredibly vulnerable with few resources and support, feeling like they don't have options on campus. Even if they're married students in law school, they oftentimes are referred to abortion clinics. They feel driven to abortion. They feel it's their duty to their parents not to disappoint them in school. And so for a lot of reasons, we have decided that we want to sit there and prevent what has happened to millions of women in this past generation and do better for the next.
So these young women in college or in graduate school, some of them of means, some of them not of means, are aborting at a higher rate than other women in other demographics. And it sounds like you are saying that they, first of all, feel like they have no choice in the matter, but that they're also being told in one form or another that if they have this baby, all of their plans, all of their future that they're building for themselves through their education is over.
Absolutely. And we, in fact, asked last fall at this time 400 pro-life student leaders from the best campuses across the country, Ivy League schools and state schools, religious schools, private institutions, women's colleges, small schools, large schools, everything in between. We asked the activists on who are really out there for all of us and trying to make a difference on college campuses. We asked them, if you were trying to help a pregnant woman on your college campus, could you help direct her towards resources? Is there housing? Is there daycare? Is there maternity coverage? Is there a way to connect with resources that are available, you know, throughout the campus? Is there a central place where people can go to get the information? And how do they connect off campus? And overwhelmingly, pro-life student leaders who wanted to be helpful, and whom we have, Feminists for Life, has been there for many years, trying to give them our rich pro-life feminist history and to change the campus to be pro-woman and pro-life, tell us exactly what you said, that if you're on a college campus and you're pregnant, your experience is over, that they overwhelmingly feel that they cannot stay in school if they're pregnant or parenting. And so this really does affirm, unfortunately, the statistics that we see from Guttmacher and other places that say that women are driven to abortion in huge numbers. There's no coincidence that abortion clinics live on, you know, operate on the outskirts of poor communities and college campuses. If somebody has lived a privileged life or a middle class life, and, you know, because their parents are well off or comfortable at some, you know, at some level, if they become pregnant and they're emancipated from their parents, they're off, most often on their own, financially feeling incredibly poor, or they feel that and they don't see how they can stay in school. We know that there are students who have been cut off of their housing, that they don't have the maternity coverage. They don't know how to manage this, and there's no place to turn that seems to know where all the resources are on and off campus, and we are determined to change this.
Is it true, Sarah, and I've heard this it's in one of, you know, the many conversations I've had on this subject, it's coming back again and again, that young women who enter as freshmen in a college or a university who will poll or self-identify as pro-life, a fair percentage of them, perhaps a majority of them, by the time they've finished 4 years of school, will self-identify as pro-choice. Is that true?
You are referring correctly to a Gallup poll that helped re-channel Feminists for Life's efforts, you know, a little over a decade ago. We learned from them that they had asked women or girls who were graduating from high school if they would describe themselves as pro-life or pro-choice. And 47% of teenage girls who were graduating from high school said they were pro-life. 37% said they were pro-choice. The rest didn't know. But by the time girls had gone through 2 years of college, these young women, 56% of them described themselves as pro-choice. And after 4 years in college, 73% of young women said they supported the pro-choice position, or they supported abortion as an option for women. And I think that this really speaks volumes to the lack of resources on college campus. It's not just that academia, overwhelmingly, those who are, you know, running the universities and those who are teaching the next generation, that they support abortion overwhelmingly. It is the fact that a generation that has now seen vividly that this is a baby inside a woman's womb, that they feel they can do no better, and they begrudgingly oftentimes say that they support the pro-choice position because they can't figure it out for themselves or for those they love or for those they care about, and it's almost a position by default. But this has got huge ramifications for all these college graduates who come out generation after, you know, year after year, who are future parents and journalists, who decide policy for this country, who decide laws for this country, who decide where our medicine and our insurance policies are going to go, HR, human resources people, small business owners, and Fortune 500 employees. Every single walk of life is touched by these women whose minds have been changed by the college experience, by the fact that they do not see that how women can graduate from college if they are pregnant or parenting, and they don't even see their professors on the tenure track having babies. It is incredibly difficult for college professors who are on the tenure track, and we've been told this over and over again, that they feel they have no choice. Even if they describe themselves as pro-choice, they feel personally that they do not have the support that they need and deserve to take time off and have children if they want to seek tenure. That is unacceptable.
Sarah Foster is our guest, Executive Director of Feminists for Life, based in Washington, D.C. When we come back, 10 more minutes with her talking about feminism and abortion. We'll take your phone calls after the break as well, 1-877-623-MYIE, or your email here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. We're coming to you live this Monday, August the 25th. I'm Todd Wilkin. When we come back, speaking of feminism in general, can we turn the clock back on the feminist movement, back to the earliest feminists who were not only pro-woman but also pro-life? Can it be done? Or is that a little bit like trying to close the barn door after the horse has left? 1-877-623-MYIE or talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, it's a pro-life viewpoint of early feminists being taught at women's studies courses in college campuses. Stay tuned.
Sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Issues Etc., Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Planned Parenthood seeks to undermine abstinence.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Planned Parenthood is in the midst of a nationwide campaign to convince state governors to reject federal funding for abstinence until marriage programs in state public schools. The pro-abortion organization argues that abstinence-only programs do not work and are a waste of taxpayer money. Critics of Planned Parenthood counter that abstinence programs do work and remind lawmakers that Planned Parenthood has a vested interest in sexually active adolescents. Despite such protests, Planned Parenthood has already convinced 14 states to reject federal funding for abstinence programs and is seeking to add to that number.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Sarah Foster is our guest. 10 more minutes talking about feminism and abortion. 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Let's see what Joe has to say. He's been waiting in his car. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Todd. My question for your guest would be that when she is in any type of debate or argument or discussion, even on an individual level, does coming from a feminist perspective give her any degree of credibility with her opponents, or is her, I'll say, brand of feminism dismissed merely because it's not pro-abortion? Thanks.
Very good question, Joe. Thank you very much. Sarah?
Well, that is an excellent question. Feminists for Life has a 14-year record of focusing on feminist solutions, working to support pregnant and poor women, supporting those women who have experienced domestic violence, working, to support fathers, but also obviously opposing any woman who would be denied child support or who are being harmed or coerced into an abortion. We have feminist credentials because we've worked alongside of other women's organizations on those reasons that would drive women to abortion. So absolutely, Feminists for Life has a unique position within the pro-life and feminist movements. And we walk our talk, and I encourage your listener and other, and especially the young man who asked the question, to go to Feminists for Life's website and look up under news our 14-year history of working to realize Susan B. Anthony's dream to address the root causes that drive women to abortion, because that was one of her dreams. And we also obviously have the early suffragists history on our side as well. So it opens up a lot of doors, and we're not confrontational. Rather than going into debates, we usually work in forum-type situations, moderating solutions rather than arguing with each other, bringing people together to say, what can we do about this to do better for women? We all agree this isn't the best we can do. We all agree that this is that abortion's a reflection, that we have not met the needs of women. What can we do together to get housing, child care, maternity coverage, whatever it is on this campus, and work together to find the solutions that women need and support the other options, not abortion, but what can we do to support married parenting, single parenting, partnered parenting, all the adoption options. It's more than having it or not. It's about how we can support him and her and also support education. So we have great, we have a good door opener, but it's based on the fact that we have walked our talk for a long time. We have the credentials.
Herman's waiting on the line in Illinois. Herman, thank you for waiting. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I think it was very insightful to run down the current state of pressures on young women, especially, and as well as men on the college campus today, as you did. And going back some decades, even before the Roe v. Wade decision, back in the 20s and 30s, there was an unprecedented number of women getting all kinds of accomplished degrees in colleges and universities, entering medicine and professional fields, and you didn't have abortion, you didn't have the sexual revolution, you didn't have condom machines in the dormitories, co-ed dormitories, and it seems to me that the university setting has not only passively but almost actively abetted the downside of the sexual revolution in many ways: abortion, sexually transmitted diseases, the homosexual movement, and a whole host of other things that are mitigating pressures against the support that comes from, shall we say, a moral responsibility.
Harold, thank you very much. I'm sorry, Herman, thank you very much. Your thoughts there, Saren?
Herman's bringing up a lot of topics. Some of them are outside of Feminists for Life's mission, of course, and they're huge issues. But talking about the history of what has been happening on college campuses, obviously there were incredible women who did go to colleges, but it wasn't until the 1970s and 60s that they started going in increasing numbers to colleges and universities across the country. And so you see the volume of women increasing. What I think is most interesting to note is that abortion was not illegal in many states, and those where it was illegal, it wasn't enforced in many states in the United States or the District of Columbia. And I'm talking about the latter half of the 1800s, and that abortifacients, thinly disguised abortifacients, were the number one advertisers in women's magazines. That's why Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton and many other women were talking about abortion and the rights of the unborn and the damage done to women, and talking about infanticide, you know, during the 1870s, 1860s, et cetera. And, of course, there were places where the laws were never enforced or rarely enforced. My family has been in Washington, D.C. since the Revolutionary War. My grandparents lived across the street from a midwife in the 1930s who openly performed abortions. They said they heard women going to the clinics crying, being dropped off by men in big cars, and that they would leave, they heard them screaming inside, and that they would leave crying again. And unfortunately, little has changed in the fact that women still feel oftentimes driven to lay their bodies down, and we have to change this. I mean, I think that there are many people in this generation, there are a lot of wonderful student activists out there who are on the, you know, front lines, who are saying that their siblings didn't deserve this, that their parents, their mothers, and sometimes both parents, you know, have been involved in having an abortion before the, and after even they were born, and they think it wasn't the best they can do. And how do we do this in a way that is loving but strong? And and so we're really anxious to help, especially as we kick off this new school year. We want to be there for all these student leaders who are there for us to help spread a pro-woman, pro-life message that includes fathers in the solution and schools in the solution.
Susan writes us from Tupelo, Mississippi. She says, too much irony here. Young, ambitious women who feel that they have no choice but to avail themselves of their right to choose after having chosen to risk pregnancy. The tail wags the dog once again. It's become society's burden to provide those unburdened by chaste and moral behavior a means to unburden themselves. Your thoughts there with only about a minute as we wrap up.
I think Susan's bringing up a lot of important points as well. And I think the biggest irony is that in the aftermath of what was supposed to be the 70s women's movement of feminism, that women felt less competent in many ways to have a child than they did before the Roe v. Wade decision. I think that's a huge irony. And I think that this generation who really has experienced this in so many different directions is learning to know better, and we have to be there to change the direction and working with people. These young revolutionaries on college campus, they want to make a difference. And Feminist for Life is uniquely able to help reach out to those leaders who think that and have been raised to support abortion, and we're helping to change their mind. And I think that is it what we really want. We want people to come together over solutions, and we can fight about how to solve this. But isn't that a better place to be?
So with only about 30 seconds here, finally, tell us briefly about Perception is Reality, your new study.
Perception is Reality is the answers that pro-life leaders gave to Feminists for Life when they said, when we asked them, can you find the resources that women need on and off campus? And overwhelmingly, the answers were no. And we're not just talking about unmarried students. We're talking about married students, and we're talking about professors. So it's not just about, you know, that part of the debate. Women and men who are leading the pro-life movement want us to help them create a place that they can refer women and men on campus for counseling and also the off-campus resources. And that's what we're going to do this year, and also bring awareness through our new series of speakers who personally tell the stories from a perspective of being adopted, being aborted, a birth mother, and women who have been in college, married and not, and what it's like for them on a college campus. There's a reason why the vast majority of women who have abortions are college age. It's not a coincidence, and we've got to do something about it, and we've got to answer the unmet needs of the student leaders who are pro-life and want to make a change for us and for the next generation.
Folks, you will find information on this new study, Perception is Reality, on the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find a direct link to Feminists for Life, issuesetc.org. Click on demand and look for the link to Feminists for Life. Saren Foster is Executive Director of Feminists for Life based in Washington, D.C. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd, very much.
It is so sad. We were told that Roe was going to solve all these problems. And what has it done? It's not only made the problems that existed already worse, it's not only, I think, stifled the feminist movement, the genuine old-school feminist movement that said women are deserving of equal dignity and protection and rights in society. It stifled that, but it's created a whole raft of new problems for women across all economic and social and demographic lines, where women feel that they have no choice Well, they do, and the choice, the best choice for them and for their babies, is always life. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.